We'll call the meeting of the Committee on Energy Finance and Policy to order. We have a fairly lengthy agenda today, members. I hope we can move into it immediately. Do I need to make this announcement? Okay. Before we do that, we should dispense with the minutes from the February 2nd meeting.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Representative Nornes, thank you. Representative Nornes moves the adoption of the minutes from February 2nd. Are there any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Mr. Chair, I
minutes are adopted.
For the record, indicate that I forgot my watch today. I've been here since 2:30.
Duly noted, Representative Nornes. We'll give you credits for that. You'll be 15 minutes late the next time. Right. Members, what I have asked the testifiers today to do is come and talk about the Conservation Improvement Program, the energy conservation requirements that were part of the Next Generation Energy Act. I think hearings have been held in which the emphasis has been on the degree to which these goals are being accomplished. What I'm more interested in this hearing is to hear from the department and from various providers from their perspective what it's really going to take to make this program work. I'm not concerned so much about progress at this point, except that it's related to that. And we will have a slight change in the agenda. We have been asked to accommodate a testifier from out of state. So we're going to move Mr. Schiebel's testimony up to third place. But we will begin then with the Director of the Office of Energy Security, Deputy Commissioner Vaughn.
Thank you, Chairman Hilty, members. I appreciate you inviting us back here again. This afternoon, we're going to talk about the Conservation Improvement Program. Introduce myself. I'm Bill Glahn, the Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Commerce. With me is Jeffrey Haas, one of my folks. He's a supervisor who is in charge of the Conservation Improvement Program. These programs, all utilities in the state have to have conservation improvement programs in place. The programs themselves go back for decades, but until recently, the focus of the programs were on the spending requirements. For example, most electric utilities had the requirement to spend 1.5% of their retail revenue on conservation efforts. A couple years ago, we changed, through statute, we changed the emphasis to a results requirement, asking utilities to save 1.5% of their retail energy on an annual basis. And now, just to explain a little bit about how that works, it's not the case that every year a utility has to have 1.5% less they sell than the year before. If that were true, the easiest thing to do, if that were allowed, would just not serve customers. But no, the idea is that say if there's 2% underlying growth in a utility and they're able to save 1.5% of their energy through conservation, then they still show a net growth of 0.5%. Or they could add a large customer, but that would just increase the base on which they would have to achieve savings year in and year out through their conservation efforts. So just a little bit of a context about what the 1.5% reduction means. Mr. Haas is going to discuss results from the plan years of 2006 and 2007. 2008 results won't be available until sometime this spring as the utilities compile their reports and then submit them to the office here. But again, I understand you're interested in hearing about the challenges utilities face in meeting the 1.5% savings goals. I think the utilities themselves are the best ones to explain that. So we're going to try to be as brief as possible and get out of the way and let the utilities explain on a case-by-case basis what they're up to. But I would like Mr. Haas to give us a little background on the results from these 2 years and to give a little overview of what the overall achievements have been across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. That's fine. Mr. Haas, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, members of the committee. As Director Guan mentioned, my name is Jeffrey Haas. I'm the supervisor for the Demand Efficiency Unit at the Office of Energy Security, which is primarily responsible for activities related to the conservation improvement programs that are being undertaken by all of our utilities in the state. This unit is responsible for reviewing various conservation plans from each of the utilities, evaluating modification filings, status reports, providing us with achievements from the previous year's activities, and looking at cooperative municipal utility plans and providing them with feedback related to the content of those plans. In addition, we work with all the utilities to evaluate new programs and strategies and to try to increase the effectiveness of all the programs. One of the key activities that we are involved in is the review of assumptions and methodologies for claim savings from energy conservation programs. To that end, we have been working with utilities on the development of standardized assumptions for common conservation measures and the development of measurement and verification protocols for large projects that are rebated through often through custom utility programs. It's our goal not only to achieve the savings necessary to achieve the 1.5% energy conservation goal, but to have those savings be as accurate as possible. In addition, we work to administer the conservation research and development grant funds that are assessed to the state's utilities. These funds are being used to identify new programs and new program strategies that will help our utilities meet the 1.5% savings goal. In 2008, over $1.5 million was used to fund nearly $3 million in total project costs that will seek to identify new conservation potential in Minnesota. These projects are looking at new programs that address residential plug loads, energy feedback mechanisms, energy savings associated with operations and maintenance activities, and quantifying the energy savings associated with changes to energy codes in residential and multifamily buildings. This is a pretty exciting group of projects that we're working on right now, and it reflects some of the new fodder, I think, that is available to us under the conservation program. Namely, the Next Generation Energy Act opened up the door for not only direct program activities to be counted towards utilities' achievements, but also for indirect program activities, market transformation, as well as electric utility infrastructure projects to be counted as savings to the utility conservation program activities. These are some of the game changers, in my opinion, that have the potential to provide a significant amount of savings to utility activities that are above and beyond what I would term the traditional program measures that are contained in conservation programs, which include the standards of lighting, motors, as well as HVAC replacement programs. We recently released the Conservation Improvement Program Energy and CO2 Savings Report that was prepared by the Office of Energy Security and provides the energy savings and associated CO2 savings for the 2006 and 2007 program years. A copy of that report has been passed around for all of you to look at, as well as a summary of the report activities. For these 2 years, Minnesota utilities spent approximately $206 million on SIP-related activities and achieved total annual energy savings of 875,000 megawatt hours of electricity and 4 billion cubic feet of natural gas. resulting in more than 1 million tons of avoided CO2 carbon dioxide emissions. For reference, this is approximately the amount of electricity that could be produced by a 100 megawatt power plant and enough gas to supply the annual annual needs of 40,000 homes. In addition, utilities spent...
Before we leave that consideration, and I noticed in that report on pages 6 and 7, there seems to be a fairly large difference between the savings realized relative to spending on the parts of the IOUs and the co-ops. Do you know what the explanation for that is?
Well, I would say that some of that is attributable to the customer segment breakdown of the two utilities. Cooperatives have a much larger residential and farm component to their overall energy sales. And what we see through utility programs is that residential programs are typically a fair amount more expensive than our commercial industrial program activities. Some of this has to do with the fact that the intensity in commercial and industrial businesses, one, you're selling more energy, and there are sometimes more opportunities to reduce the energy consumption with large impact projects. These are the projects that we see come in through what are called custom programs, which have to do more with process-related improvements that may or may not increase production or reduce the amount of energy consumption per unit of production.
Thank you. Representative Kalin, to this point.
To that point, Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering, Mr. Haas, if you agree with my observation that the 2007 numbers, there's a roughly a 2006 is a dollar invested to 2 kWh saved on the co-ops, and it goes almost to a dollar invested to 3 kWh savings in 07. I know that the co-op changes didn't take effect in 2007 from the bill that Mr. Chair, you and I worked on. But I do think it's a recognition that the co-ops are starting to take their commitment more seriously, I think in response to the work that we did. Would you agree with that?
I think that's very accurate, and I know all of our utilities have been working very hard and very diligently about with regard to how these programs can meet the goals that have been laid out for them.
Mr. Ott, please proceed.
excuse me. In addition, utilities have spent approximately $7 million annually on programs to provide energy efficiency and conservation services to our low-income customers. As a result of the various successes of the conservation program activities, utilities were awarded financial incentives totaling over $23.7 million in the 2006 and 2007 program years. Those incentives are awarded through the Public Utilities Commission and are based on achievements above their pre-identified goals. Program costs are paid by the ratepayers of the individual utilities, and anyone paying into the program is eligible to participate. Roughly 80% of the program achievements are the result of commercial industrial programs, and 20% of the program achievements are the result of residential program activities, roughly speaking. Historically, SIP projects have reduced electricity consumption in Minnesota by approximately 0.8% annually out of an estimated growth rate of about 2.3% without conservation programs. The Next Generation Energy Act of 2007 strengthened Minnesota's commitment to energy savings, establishing an annual energy savings goal of 1.5% of retail sales for electric and natural gas utilities, which is in addition to the spending requirements that were already in place. The savings that are mentioned in the report are savings that predate the Next Generation Energy Act. and represent prior utility program activities prior to the passage of the savings requirement. As is illustrated in the summary sheet, meeting the 1.5% energy conservation goals requires approximately a doubling of achievements from the 2007 program years on the electric side and roughly 2.5 times the achievements on the natural gas side from the 2007 program year. As I mentioned, one of the challenges that many utilities are faced with could be classified as opportunity challenges, which is to say that utilities that do have a large number of commercial and industrial customers have more opportunities to assist those customers with cost-effective conservation programs, whereas utilities that have large residential customer segments may not have the same number of cost-effective efficiency and conservation opportunities available to them. Just to give you a sense of scale in terms of the cost of the program, we evaluate program costs on both a lifetime KWH save basis, but as well as a first year a kilowatt hour savings basis. And just to use an example of Xcel's program activities, if you look at their the energy savings delivered through their business segment, as far as the first year cost is concerned, the total is slightly more than 12 cents per kilowatt hour. Whereas the company's residential segment is roughly slightly more than 86 cents per kilowatt hour for first year energy savings delivered through those programs. With that, I'll conclude my testimony and I'll be available for any questions that any of you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Hoff.
Mr. Chair, members, just to put a little more context, on Monday we had a discussion about the interaction between the Office of Energy Security and the Public Utilities Commission, and our relationship as far as the SIP programs are concerned is a little different in that is the office actually is the regulator of the SIP programs in terms of program content and monitoring of results. The Public Utilities Commission has in large part jurisdiction over cost recovery of the program costs and cost recovery of any bonuses awarded to utilities for their achievements under the program. So kind of the content of the programs and results is our thing, and the dollars involved are a Public Utilities Commission matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions at this time? Representative Weston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the other witness, the first witness, your last comment on the cost of SIP, 86 cents for residential per kilowatt hour and 12 cents for business or industrial, that's an average? Does it make sense to spend SIP on an 86 cents a kilowatt hour return? Does that make sense, or what point does it not pay to do it?
Mr. Huff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, the savings, the costs that I mentioned are the first year cost. That is to say that the savings that accrue to the customer in the first year, primarily those savings that we're looking at for purposes of calculating the 1.5% goal, are the only savings that are considered in that figure. These savings for a measure do incorporate the measure life, and so if you were to look at those same costs on a lifetime basis, the business side ends up coming in at under 1 cent, 0.7 cents, and is roughly 9.9 cents on the residential customer side. So those savings, for example, for a CFL, once you put that CFL into a residential customer's home, the savings really accrue to that customer every year for the lifetime of that measure, which is going to vary from 5 to 7, in some cases 10 years, depending on where that CFL is installed.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrum.
To that same issue, the 9.9 cents, can you explain what you mean by that? That's the cost over the lifetime period or 10 years. how does that equate? Maybe I'm figuring it wrong in my mind. Does that equate to the residential cost for that customer? Is, what, 7-8 cents a kilowatt right now? And if it's 9.9 cents, even over its life, how does that make sense? Can you square that for me,
Mr. Haas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, I can try. The again, these are average costs for that particular year. In this case, it was 2007. Depending on the year, there are going to be different average costs associated with the program. Some of the costs that are assigned to the residential programs do look at the load, some of the load management activities, which are not necessarily reflected accurately in this type of a cost metric. Load management is a program to evaluate, well, that seeks to shed load during peak periods of time, and the costs associated with those don't necessarily result in kilowatt hour savings as much as they result in KW savings. And that those KW savings are very valuable to the utilities as at the time that they are being controlled. So I would there's also a number of educational programs, customer outreach programs that are wrapped into this overall cost as well, which don't necessarily result in the in a hard number of kilowatt hours savings associated with those programs, but are somewhat of a necessary component to utility programs in and of themselves.
Director Kwan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, having spent many hours in business school sitting in cost accounting classes and scarred as a result of it, I can tell you that I think I understand the exercise you want to go through, which is try to compare on an apples-to-apples basis whether the conservation efforts are producing results at a cost less than, say, just generating electricity. And from the work we've done, we would say the answer is yes. And I think what Mr. Haas was trying to do was show the relative results between residential efforts and commercial industrial efforts, where we believe that the residential efforts are cost effective compared to the cost of serving those residential residential customers with electricity. Very much cost effective for commercial and industrial customers. Now when you go and put on to divide up costs between residential and commercial for overhead and all that, you end up with these results that I agree with you don't seem to make sense on the surface. But if you go and scrape a couple layers down, we feel pretty confident, even for residential programs, with the possible exception of some of the low-income programs, are cost effective with generation alternatives.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Appreciate that further explanation. I still have my reservations in some areas, but on the SIP and the 1.5% meeting, I know we briefly discussed this, but Mike, generally, how are things going with this, and are you in discussions with utilities? I've talked to some of my local utilities, one being the city utility where I live, having concern about cutting 1.5% every year at some point becomes a mathematical impossibility, short of, you know, us using gas lanterns instead of light switches like they used to do, and maybe that's where we go. Soy candles, I guess, if they didn't have them back then. Is there any discussion with the utilities to convert or allow renewable projects that we are pursuing, maybe seabed projects, to be part of their SIP expenditure or compliance, where if there's some of those projects that need upfront investment, but there's long-term savings or benefit to the state. Maybe it stops global warming because we don't have so much CO2 out there, although this past week and weeks we could have used a little global warming. Is there any discussion of going down that road or looking at that as a possibility so utilities can meet some of their SIP objectives through more renewable projects in our state as well, and having the benefits of offsetting coal or the generations that seem to be what we're pursuing to not have more of?
Well, Representative Westrum, Director Glahn is going to respond to that, but before he does, I just want to mention that the questions you're raising are exactly what we're having this hearing, and if we can manage to get to it, we'll hear from the utilities and their perspective. Director Glahn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrum, the answer to your question is yes. We're working on getting a bill introduced that was announced as part of the Governor's Green Jobs Investment Initiative, which would allow utilities to count toward their conservation, the 1.5% goals, energy saved, at least from their viewpoint, saved by customers who install solar PV systems or anaerobic digester systems in the case of gas utilities. There already is a provision in the existing SIP that allows for some smaller solar PV systems to be installed and have the host utilities count that energy produced toward their savings goal, because it's, again, as you point out, if you look at it from their perspective, that's energy they're not selling to their customer, and it's a renewable source of power, so it has the same effect on the environment and greenhouse gas reductions as well. When it was a program focused on spending, there were allowances to meet the spending limit by spending some portion of it on renewable energy projects. What we've been working on, and the legislation that, or the statute today, and the legislation we're proposing to further expand it, allows the Department of Commerce, the Office of Energy Security, to come up with a different formula, because it's a different animal. Renewable energy is not energy conservation, although it looks very similar. So we're working on a different way of measuring cost effectiveness that would allow for these projects to move forward. And I don't know if we had an application for the solar one, but I know there's one utility interested in using the provisions that would allow them to count some of the solar energy toward conservation. So we're making some progress on that, but we're looking at solar as a way of doing it. Also, anaerobic digestion. We'd be open to other renewable energy sources too, assuming that we can find a robust and defendable way of calculating cost effectiveness and making sure that we have an apples to apples and a comparison between renewable and conservation, and that this is money being well spent.
Thank you.
Did you have a question? I had your name on the list here. Maybe it just didn't get crossed off.
I don't think it did get crossed off, but I was just wanting to direct the committee's attention to the utilities filing in the Big Stone 2 proceeding a couple years ago, where the estimated cost of the bus bar leaving the plant with a very low estimate for cost of carbon, or without the cost of carbon, I can't remember which, but a very low estimate if it was about 7 cents a kilowatt hour, and their own estimates of the existing pre the Next Gen Energy Act changes cost of conservation programs was under a penny per kilowatt hour. I'd be open to Representative Westrum's cooperation and help if we wanted to say that the utilities should do all conservation cost effectively before they do any new generation, but I don't think that they're open to that, and I don't think we need to go there. So.
Are there further questions for these witnesses at this time? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Schiebel. Welcome back to the legislature.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a rare privilege for me to get to come before the House Committee. I didn't have a chance to do that much in the past.
This is the upper body, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I do...
Even though we are in the basement.
We refer to it as the ground floor. I do have a handout if you want to... Oh, can I keep this one? Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kenrick Scavel, and I'm here today on behalf of Dairyland Power Cooperative. Dairyland is a G&T cooperative. We were formed in 1941. We're based actually in La Crosse, Wisconsin. We serve 25 member cooperatives, 20 municipalities in four states, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, and Illinois. We have about 1,229 megawatts of generation potential and about 3,000 miles of transmission line. Of particular interest to this committee, we serve three cooperatives in southeast Minnesota, headquartered respectively in Rushford, in Rochester, and in Albert Lea. As a G&T that operates in multiple states, I passed out the handout because I wanted to touch very briefly before we got into the FIT requirements on sort of the variety of requirements that we are exposed to in the four states that we operate. It gives you a little bit of a sense of what our neighboring states are doing, and also just raise the point that I really enjoy the cooperative spirit that's been occurring between the states, because for us, even the definition of what counts as a renewable or energy conservation can vary from state to state. And so the more uniform those definitions are, the easier it is for us to conform to the requirements and the objectives of each of those four states. You can look at the renewable energy standards. They vary a little bit. Minnesota, obviously, the most aggressive of the three. Wisconsin implemented a 10% standard probably a year or two before Minnesota did the 25 by 25. Illinois passed the 25 by 25 in 2008. However, a variation is that for whatever reason, Illinois chose to exempt co-ops. Iowa, to this point, does not have a renewable energy standard for cooperatives. They simply require that all utilities provide some type of green energy program so that members can voluntarily purchase from the utility. To the debate at hand, energy efficiency standards, again, I put together just a comparison of the four states. Minnesota, as you know, has the 1.5% standard in place now. Wisconsin has had a little bit of a different approach. They have an entity called Focus on Energy, which is a sort of a statewide third-party administered program. And cooperatives have the option or the choice of opting into it or retaining their autonomy. We've got cooperatives in our system in Wisconsin that have opted in. We have cooperatives that have chosen to remain autonomous. Illinois passed a 1.5% energy efficiency standard last year when they did the 25 by 25. Iowa currently, at least for cooperatives, simply has a biennial reporting requirement. Again, they don't have any standards that cooperatives must meet. They simply require us to report to them. Now, on to Dairyland specifically, we've got a long history, as do most cooperatives, well, frankly, all utilities, of offering and promoting energy efficiency programs to our member owners. We've got a standardized list of incentives that are used to encourage our members to invest in energy efficiency efforts, and you've probably heard this list before, things like energy audits, energy assessments, ground source heat pump incentive programs, energy efficiency lighting, CFL and non-CFL, of course, energy efficiency appliances. And the one that I kind of enjoy is the LED Christmas light incentive that's rather recent. And the reason that piques my interest is because I was surprised when I found out that out of roughly a 700 to 800 megawatt load, Dairyland experiences a 40 to 45 megawatt load increase at Christmas time just from the Christmas light. So if we can cut that energy use down substantially, that's quite a peaking difference for us. In addition to the traditional incentives, Dairyland also offers a custom rebate program. These are projects that fall outside of the standard list of initiatives. When approached with a project that doesn't fall within our characteristics, we calculate an energy savings from their project and then give them a rebate that's proportional to the energy savings, obviously within some upper limits. More specifically, in 2007, Darylin spent slightly over $2 million on our energy efficiency efforts, resulting in 3.3 million kilowatt hours of savings. That equates to just under 0.5% savings in 2007. As I look back over our history, our kind of baseline tended to be in that 0.3 to 0.5 range. That was sort of our historical baseload or baseline. In 2008, Darylin spent about $2.3 million, so a slight increase in our efforts. Increased our energy savings to about 8.7 million kilowatt hours, which equates to a little over 1%. So we completely doubled, if you will, our kilowatt hour savings through our efforts in 2008. Darylin is in the process with our distribution cooperatives of evaluating potential programs that will put us closer to the 1.5% target. For example, in 2008, one of the reasons we were able to get better, more effective benefits was by a fluorescent bulb program, CFL program, in which we literally put two bulbs in the hands of every household in our system. Darylin is also in the process of hiring a member services manager who will be responsible for coordinating and enhancing our energy efficiency efforts on a system-wide basis. And that's the point I wanted to make. Even though Minnesota is the only state of the four that we serve that has a 1.5% standard, we like to approach these issues from a system-wide basis. And so if we develop a program that can achieve high results in Minnesota, we want to be able to apply those system-wide. And since we are looking for a manager, if you know of a good potential candidate, send them our direction with a resume. I thought I'd conclude just with some observations, because I know, Mr. Chair, you were looking for some suggestions or reactions, if you will, to where we are today. I will say that the managers in my distribution cooperatives are telling me that they find the task of meeting the energy efficiency standards to be more daunting than for us as a system meeting the 25 by 25 standards. What they're suggesting, and you've heard this before, is that they feel the task becomes increasingly more difficult each year as the proverbial low-hanging fruit becomes harvested. And so they feel the task will grow more difficult with time. Obviously, we're hoping for new technology to help us reap more benefits. As I reflect on the various approaches of the states that we operate in, I did want to just throw it on the table that, you know, there might be some advantages to a centralized third-party administered approach compared to requiring each utility to create its own unique energy efficiency program, hire the necessary staff to implement it. Wisconsin, as I mentioned, is a centralized third-party administered program called Focus on Energy, and it allows cooperatives the option of, or the choice of opting into the program or not. It's not something I'm advocating, but I just wanted to throw it out as a point of discussion. Secondly, you know, we've created the Midwest Renewable Energy Tracking System to track and allow for the trading of renewable energy credits. That was a way of helping ensure compliance, tracking and trading of green credits. I would suggest there might also be an opportunity for a similar approach for energy efficiency credits. We could refer to them as white credits instead of green credits. Now, since the goal, and this discussion occurred before I started testifying, and I appreciated that, because since the goal of for the outcome of both green and white credits is to reduce our carbon footprint, I would suggest you may want to consider them to be interchangeable. This would provide some flexibility for utilities that may run short, for example, of attaining the 1.5% goal in a given year, and would provide for the opportunity of banking and or trading white credits. If a utility, for example, was slightly short of their goal, perhaps they could substitute a certain amount of green credits or the lack of white credits to be in compliance and yet reduce the carbon footprint of their utility for that given year relative to the goal. Because at the end of the day, both renewable energy resources and energy efficiency both equally reduce CO2 emissions to the environment. Point three, the current approach of recognizing energy efficiency efforts only in the year in which the action occurs tends to encourage investments in short-term and low-cost incentives. CFLs is a great example. They have a limited lifespan, they're inexpensive, but I would argue that we would want also incentives for customers to invest in energy efficiency efforts that have long-term benefits and more kilowatt-hour potential savings. And the one that comes to mind is, for example, ground source heat pumps. It's easy to provide an incentive for someone to buy a $3 light bulb. It's much more difficult to incent people to the extent that they will invest in a $12,000 to $25,000 ground source heat pump. And we know that the major or the most energy intensive uses in every home is heating and water heating, space heating and water heating. Often electric utilities are prohibited from really cashing in on reducing energy use in those two areas because quite often it's natural gas or propane that's doing the job of heating. Ground source heat pumps provide us an excellent opportunity to have a dramatic energy efficiency impact on those homes. And I would argue that ground source heat pumps in many respects is a form of solar energy. In the wintertime, you are literally pumping geothermal energy that's been stored in the earth into the home. In the summertime, you're taking that solar energy directly and pumping it back into the earth. I would love to see some consideration for either allowing geothermal to be counted as a SIP investment for each year that that particular pump is operating. That would give utilities the ability to provide much more aggressive incentives, or allow geothermal to be counted as a renewable resource. Granted, you're not making electricity from it, but you are using solar energy as a heating and cooling resource. Well, that concludes my remarks. I'd be glad to respond to any questions you may have. And I'd just like to say I appreciate the opportunity to both provide an update and share a few reflections.
Members, are there questions for Mr. Scavel at this time? Seeing none, thank you very much. Very interesting suggestions. Appreciated. Mr. Comet?
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, members. My name is Gary Connett, and I'm the Director of Demand-Side Management and Member Services for Great River Energy. We're a generation and transmission cooperative similar to Dairyland, and we serve 28 retail distribution cooperatives throughout the state of Minnesota, from the southwestern part of Minnesota all the way to the Arrowhead region of Minnesota. You have a handout of my slides that I was going to talk to. There's 12 slides there, and I'm going to go through them fairly fast. The first eight or so are providing that sort of update that you can look at your leisure. And then the last couple of slides talk a little more in terms of what you're really after here today, and that is suggestions or ideas for the legislation. But quickly, through the first eight or so, in 2007, after the legislation was passed, we established a goal for our co-ops and DREs to meet this 1.5% goal. And we're inching our way to it, if you will. That's our plan, to work our way up to 2010. And I want to just kind of walk through that with you, if you will. The third slide on the first page talks about our annual conservation goal, the 1.5% goal. At Great River Energy, we see it as two goals, if you will, two parts of the goal. The first part is the 1%. And I describe that as a goal on the customer side of the meter. That's the energy efficiency savings that we're going to do in customers' homes and businesses. The 0.5% is the system side improvements. Those are the things that we can do to improve our efficiency on the distribution side, on the transmission side, and on our generation side as well. And so those are things that other people like Great River Energy and our distribution co-ops really have responsibility for. In total, our goal is 167,600,000 kilowatt hours that we have to save each and every year when we get to the 1.5% goal. On the second page, top of there, in terms of how did we do in 2008? In the residential programs, we saved 40,864,000 kilowatt hours in 2008. On the C&I programs, we saved 82 million, or thereabouts, in kilowatt hours, for a total of 123 million kilowatt hours. So we actually, in 2008, met the 1% goal on the customer side of the meter. In terms of where that energy savings came, I provided two pie charts. The first one is a residential program pie chart, and it just basically shows where that energy savings is coming from. Half of it comes from lighting. Interestingly, at Great River Energy, we hired a marketing department for the first time. We've never had a marketing department before, but we need someone that can help us market these programs. And they helped us establish programs with Menards and with Walmart and with GE to help market compact fluorescent lights. And so we were fairly successful in there and achieved 50% of our goal for residential savings from lighting. But we also recognize that over time, we're not going to continue to count on CFLs to be a big program for residential. The other large slice came from what I call HVAC, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning. And for Great River Energy, that's a cycled air conditioning program. That's a high-efficiency air conditioning program. That's the ground source heat pumps that Kenrick talked about, and air source heat pumps as well. And then you see some other things, appliances and other, and those don't make up quite so much pie. On the commercial and industrial side, that's where we had the 82 million kilowatt hours of savings. And that's where Great River Energy really has to move. Mr. Haas mentioned earlier that for some of the utilities, on average, 80% of their savings comes from C&I and 20% comes from residential. We think it has to be there too, but we're a little more challenged with that because our C&I customers look a little different than some of the other utilities. We don't have a lot of large C&I customers that you might think of when you think of C&I customers. Our C&I customers, commercial and industrial, are predominantly retail. They're predominantly fairly small. They're mom-and-pa hardware stores in our service territory. They're schools. They're strip malls. They're fairly small. And so for us, commercial and industrial, as much as we want to get energy savings there, it'll be a little more of a challenge for us because we don't have those real large commercial and industrial customers. But in terms of energy savings, where did it come from on the C&I side? Well, motors and VFDs. VFD stands for variable frequency drive. It's the ability to adjust the motor speed and save efficiency or save energy. 33% of our savings came from that. Lighting. It breaks down into two components. One of the components is what we call retrofit. That's going into existing buildings and changing out the lighting that already exists today to something more efficient. And the other part is new. That's going into new construction and making sure that they're putting in the most energy efficient lights right out of the gate. 31% of our savings came from lighting. 27% came from custom. And Kendrick described that. Those are those rebates that aren't they're not prescriptive. We don't have a form for them. There's something out of the ordinary, and customers come to us with these rebate requests, and we actually fill out a custom form for them, if you will, to determine their rebate savings. I'm on to page 3 at the top. Low-income programs. We also have a requirement for our low-income customers, and that is a little different. It's not a savings requirement. It's a spending requirement. And in 2008 and 2009, our co-ops have to spend 0.1% of their residential retail revenue on low-income. And for Great River Energy's 28-member co-ops, that added up to $552,000 that had to be spent in 2008. And you can see we spent slightly over that on our low-income customers. In 2010, that goal becomes a little more demanding. In 2010, it's not 0.1% of residential retail revenue, it's 0.2% of residential retail revenue, and so our spending will be somewhere a little over $1 million on low-income customers when we reach 2010. I'm on to the middle slide on sheet 3. And it's just listing a number of things that we're doing to prepare for 2010 and beyond. Looking at developing new programs that we can offer in 2010. We're looking at improvements into our current programs that we offer. And we need to train our members to be better energy advisors. We're promoting our LEED and our E3 loan programs more aggressively. LEED, is leadership in energy and environmental design. We put aside $20 million to provide low-income loans to customers that would like to build a LEED-certified building in our service territory. The E3 stands for Energy Efficient Equipment, and basically there it's a low-income or low-interest loan or a 0% interest loan for getting financing for equipment that would go into a business. We're continuing to seek partnership with others, and we see that as an important way for Great River Energy to reach this goal. Partnerships with vendors, GE, Walmart, those sort of things, Best Buy, Sears, but also partnerships with other utilities. What sort of programs can we do together and leverage strengths amongst the utilities? We're preparing for that 0.5% system-side savings. We haven't accounted for that in the past, but we're going to start accounting for that in 2010. So it's things that we're doing on the transmission side and the distribution side. Everything we do, we basically bounce it off of Mr. Haas down to the Department of Commerce and make sure that he's okay with it before we start going too far with it. And lastly, we're watching the economy. And we're kind of concerned. There's a lot of businesses in our service territory that have gone out of business. And they've cut back some of their capital expenditures. And what does that mean for conservation? So we're kind of keeping a pulse on that. My second to the last two slides here are really the suggestions and ideas that you are really looking for. And I've got a number of them, and I'll just kind of walk through them with you. The first one is, Kendrick said it, is allow banking of energy savings for maybe 5 years, which is similar to the renewable energy credit standard now. We can bank renewable energy credits for 5 years' time, and maybe we could do something similar to the energy savings as well. Adopt a process or a formula to capture the value of consumer education, training, advertising. It was mentioned as member outreach. That is so important. If you think about GRE for a minute, we serve predominantly residential customers. Kendrick mentioned it. We don't serve their space heating needs. 88% of our homes heat with gas, propane or natural gas. We don't heat their water for the most part. 70% of their homes are heat their water with gas or propane or off-peak water heating. In our residential homes, we're left with appliances, lighting, air conditioning, and these plug loads, if you will. We think we've captured the lighting as good as we can for now. The appliances, we have Energy Star appliance rebates, and we're working with Best Buy and Sears to try to leverage them as partners in it. Air conditioning. Air conditioning is sort of interesting because you just can't get that much energy savings from an air conditioner. And the reason you can't is because we live in Minnesota. And the air conditioner just doesn't simply run that many hours. And so even though we have pretty good Energy Star air conditioner rebates, you just can't get that much energy savings. And then we're down to the plug loads. And those are what we're all reading about and hearing about, these phantom loads, these plug loads as they're called. Those are a little more challenging in terms of getting something done in the home. I think it takes education. I think it takes communicating to the customer on how important it is to use that energy more wisely. And that's where my second bullet is this idea of adopting a process or a formula that captures the value of this consumer education. Because we're prepared to spend money on a grassroots effort to reach out to our members to make sure they understand how important it is to use energy wisely. One example might be for every approved dollar spent on education, it's equal to 10 kilowatt hours saved. And we'd limit that to 10% of your SIP goal. You can't meet your entire SIP goal by spending money on education. But you might have some sort of cap. 10% of the goal could be met through education. And we would give some sort of factor to the dollar spent. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. Require that a statewide energy efficiency and conservation survey be conducted that identifies the efforts that are taking place that are not currently being recorded. What I mean by that is if Great River Energy doesn't give a customer a rebate, we don't know about the energy savings. If it doesn't have a rebate attached to it, we don't know about it. But we think there's a lot of things going on in our service territory. We think that customers are listening. We think that customers are taking action. If we could somehow use some of the dollars that the Office of Energy Security gets for research and development, if we could use some of those dollars to do a statewide survey and identify some of those things that customers are doing outside of any sort of utility program, let's take credit for that. Because after all, this is a statewide goal. And if there's things being done that we don't know about, let's capture that somehow. And we'll all achieve the goal much better if we can do that. And by the way, if we did that sort of survey, maybe it would validate the education and communications that we're doing. Maybe we could sort of validate that, if you will. My third bullet on the bottom is to allow a portion of the goal, maybe up to 5%, to be met through optional utility-sponsored renewable energy programs. Similar to what Kendrick was saying, but I'm taking it to another twist to it. We have a renewable energy standard that we have to meet, and we're going to meet that. And we have a SIP goal that we have to meet, and we're going to try darn hard to meet that. But in between those is what is a program that we have, and a lot of utilities have it, where customers can buy a larger portion of their energy from renewables. For Great River Energy, we call it a Wellspring program, and we have literally thousands of customers that have selected to buy a larger portion of their energy from a renewable resource. We've got wind turbines that have been dedicated to those customers. They're not part of the renewable energy standard. They don't count there. And so, if we would like to have more wind being developed in the state, and I think we do, we could allow these customers that participate in these sort of Wellspring programs count those kilowatt hours towards meeting the SIP goal. And I would even go so far as to say, don't count the ones that have already signed up. We'll start doing this in 2010. Any new customers that sign up in 2010, that's when their energy savings would count. And I think it's achieving that goal again. It's this idea that if we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, this might be one of the ways. I'm flipping to the back page on 4. Provide for the trading of energy savings credits. And Kendrick mentioned this one as well. I call them EERS, E-E-R-S, and I don't call them. That's kind of the industry standard already. Energy Efficiency Resource Standard. It's becoming the common name for them, if you will. Provide the opportunity to trade these. And would GRE ever be in a position to trade energy efficiency credits? Probably not. It's going to take us all we can do to meet the goal. We won't have any to trade to somebody else. But if you did, it would allow us to seek out least cost conservation. If some other utility has these energy efficiency resource credits for sale, and they're less expensive than us doing energy conservation, we might buy those. The last thing, for those that actually exceed their goal and they have some credits to trade or sell, it gives them a revenue stream and allows them to finance maybe future conservation programs. It's sort of a new area, and Kendrick mentioned it as white tags, and there's some controversy around it. But I think there's a way of doing it in Minnesota. You're not taking white tags from New Jersey. You're taking them from Minnesota. And if they've been gone through the process that Mr. Haas does, they're going to be good energy efficiency savings. And I think there's a way to trade those in the state. My next bullet, include peak demand or demand response savings as part of the goal. And it is allowed in Texas and California for their goals. They can meet part of their conservation goal through demand response. And this one gets a little complicated in terms of what am I saying there? Well, conservation is about saving kilowatt hours. It's about saving energy around the clock. Demand response is about saving energy, but only for a short period of time. And it's really about saving capacity, we call it in the utility business. For example, on a hot, hot summer day, if we can control or cycle air conditioners, it reduces the need for peaking plants. This is what demand response is. It's this idea that there's a handful of hours every year where the price goes absolutely ballistic. And if customers will participate in certain programs, we don't have to build peaking plants to serve that need that only comes on a handful of days each year. It's incredibly valuable for utilities. Is there a way to incorporate that sort of program into the energy efficiency savings? It used to count for the co-ops when it was a spending goal, but it doesn't count anymore. And I'll tell you, Great River Energy has what we call a lousy load factor. Because we serve residential customers, they all come home at night and they all turn on everything they have in the house. And it's all there at 7 o'clock. And so for us, it's what we call a lousy load factor, and there's not much we can do about it except get our customers to participate in these programs. And by the way, a lot of them do. My next bullet, and I'm almost to the end here, is include propane in the energy savings goal. Great River Energy serves a lot of homes that have propane as their space heating. And we go into these homes and they'd like to be more efficient. And we've lost out on weatherizing their home because they're heating with propane. And we've lost out on doing something about their water heating because it's propane. And so it's frustrating sometimes. And if there were some way we could work with our propane customers in a way that we could help them. And one way might be is somehow or another we get some, there's an environmental cost to the propane. And that money comes back and it's money that runs a program. So we can weatherize these homes. And then it's up to you to decide who weatherizes those homes. And I'm here to offer that maybe since there are members, we might be willing to do that since there are members and we're in that service territory. But there's a big gap there. We have a lot of customers that heat with propane and there's no weatherization program for them because propane isn't included in this SIP filing here. My last one, and this one I have nothing to offer other than just recognizing the difference in customers and service area demographics. And when the goal was established, it was a goal for all the utilities in the state, and we just aren't all alike. I'm going to finish with that, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Members, are there questions? Representative Kinlan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to leave to catch a plane in a couple minutes, and so I apologize to you and to the committee and actually to the last two testifiers. But I wanted to applaud you, Mr. Connett, and GRE in general. I think along with all the utilities, I've been extremely pleased with the seriousness with which you guys have taken the task. And, you know, your commitment and your energy is evident not only in the innovative ideas that you brought to us today, but also just your attitude, and I just want to personally commend you for that. There are several ideas you brought forward that I think are really of great interest that we should pay attention to, and I don't want to draw them all of them out, but I do want to ask you specifically on the I'll be meeting with members of our congressional delegation tomorrow and talking about the federal recovery bill and the opportunity for green jobs. Literally within weeks here in Minnesota, weatherizing homes being a big, big portion of that. But we will need hundreds of new home energy auditors in order to meet that, to ramp up a lot of them in your service territory. And I hope that you'll help us over the next few weeks figure out what the right calculator is for your participation in training those energy auditors, in taking the architects and engineers who are laid off right now and turning them into certified energy managers, getting out into the institutional buildings. You know, I just think that there's an incredible win-wins here. And if I could make a more global observation for the committee, Mr. Chair, that I think the issue of credits and renewable credits under SIF and all the others really goes to this challenge. We have to make it less so for co-ops, but more for investor-owned utilities. We have to make it more financially attractive to do what we know is right, that will help you provide more reliable service at 7 o'clock in the evening. We want to be careful not to incent what you should be already doing. Peak shaving, we should talk a little bit about whether that's appropriate SIP or just good business practice as a utility. But in general, I think we need to spend some real time and effort figuring out how do we make it attractive for utilities. We can give you guys all the accolades that we can, financial incentives that don't work under the same model that you work on, but I wanted to give you all the accolades I can give you right now because I really appreciate the work and I'm very pleased that you guys are partnering with us in making this happen.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, thanks for those comments, and I too agree that energy auditing is going to be incredibly important. And to the extent that we can help with that, we'll be there.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Thomas, I just have two questions. It's very simple, but I'm wondering what, if any, quality controls standards did you look at when you were promoting the CFLs that you have been working with your customers with when you initially looked at which types of CFLs, what brands? And the other question was just what measures have you taken to assist your customers in figuring out just exactly what their phantom load is? in their, within, how do they identify their phantom load within their own homes?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Taylor,
the CFLs are an interesting one in that we get an agreement with General Electric, GE, and we have a coupon program with GE, and we feel like GE is one of the better bulbs, and so in some of our testing, that's the one that we've come to, and that's the one that we've developed our coupon program around, is GE bulbs. In regards to the phantom loads, this one's sort of more interesting. One of the things that we've done is, and you might have heard of this, there's a device called a kill a watt. Have you heard about it? You can buy them on eBay or on the internet. And it's a little device that you plug into your outlet, and then you plug your appliance into that. And it measures the kilowatt hour consumption of whatever it is, your television, your stereo system, or whatnot. And if you plug it in at 7 o'clock at the night and you come back the next morning at 7, you know exactly how many kilowatt hours it took for that 12-hour period. And so we've provided these kilowatt meters to area libraries, of all things, and put them in little black boxes, and you can check them out for a two-week period, take it home, check to see how much some of your devices are using in terms of energy, and you'll be astounded, because I was astounded with how much my television is using, while it's off, by the way. It's incredible.
Mr. Connor, I have one of those that members are welcome to borrow also if they'd like.
They're pretty handy.
They are.
I just have a follow-up on that.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you. And Mr. Connor, I just have a follow-up on that. How many of these boxes do you have out in libraries that's kind of like per capita for your number of customers?
Mr. Connor, Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, not many. And we've got to do a better job on that. And honestly, we're not alone. I think Minnesota Power is doing the very same thing as we are. So there's a couple of utilities doing that.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really impressed with the list of suggestions and ideas you've brought forward. I think it really encompasses a wide range of things that can be done. However, one thing I think that maybe is lacking is the ability to encourage people to become more responsible for their energy needs by providing on-site generation, i.e. installing solar panels, small wind turbines, other types of generation that is done at a residential level that makes the homeowner responsible for their load, thus alleviating you from supplying that load. And, I mean, if we're going to talk about spending money on education programs, why not just put that money directly into projects that can actually generate the energy on-site from clean, qualified, renewable resources? And we actually do get that transition to either green energy or alleviating your need to supply that energy. I think that maybe is an avenue that we should explore.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Connor?
Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the things that we have, it's called the, what's it called? It's an energy efficiency pyramid, if you will. And the idea is you start at the foundation and you do the things that are simple and low cost. And at the very top of the pyramid is a wind turbine and photovoltaics. It's renewables. And you don't want to do those until you've done everything in your home or business to be energy efficient. And once you've done that, then it makes sense to put a wind turbine in or a photovoltaic. And we're not there yet in terms of, if you look at the cost of PV, I'll call it, cost per kilowatt hour, it's quite high. And there's so many cost-effective conservation measures that we can do that are less expensive right now. PV's coming, and we're really bullish on it at GRE, and we're actually would like to see that included differently in our renewable energy standards, but that's another day. But I'll go back to what I'm saying here in terms of if you look at an energy efficiency pyramid, there's a lot of things that we can do that are low cost, and then you step up the pyramid, and as you get up the pyramid toward the top, then you start looking at some of these other renewable options.
If I could follow up, when you say you're bullish on it, what type of policies would you like to see in place that promote the installation or promote a wider use of potential technologies such as solar, because they are coming and we know that they're becoming more cost effective? Do you have any ideas for policies which you'd like to see that would aggregate that to more people?
Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the things that we had looked for in the renewable energy standard, the 25x25, is maybe a multiplier for photovoltaics. Instead of getting 1 kilowatt hour for every kilowatt hour generated, you'd get some sort of multiplier, and that would encourage photovoltaic development over wind, for example. And by the way, wind, it doesn't match our load profile very well. Well, photovoltaics do. We're going to get the most out of a photovoltaic panel on a hot summer day when we most need it. And so that's part of the reason we're bullish on photovoltaics.
One final question. If we're going to weight photovoltaics at a higher rate, say it's 3 times to 1, are you willing to pay then 3 times the price to the producer of that energy?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not the rates person, so I can't speak to that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There are further questions for Mr. Comet at this time. Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Members, as seems to always be the case, we have more conversation and more interest than it's possible to anticipate, or that at least that we have managed to anticipate. I don't think we're going to get through the whole agenda today. We've asked Excel if they could come back on Monday to finish up this discussion, which they graciously agreed to. We still do have Mr. Saylor and Mr. Jagish for today. And gentlemen, if you could focus on the suggestions that we're interested in. We don't care so much what you've been doing so far. We'd kind of like to know what needs to happen here to make this work for everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Saylor. I'm manager of Government Relations and Conservation, or SIP, at Connectus Energy. Connectus Energy is an electric cooperative who is served by Great River Energy. We serve the North Metro area between St. Paul, or Stillwater, Marina, and St. Croix up to St. Cloud. We have about 120,000 customers. About 95% of those are residential customers. And I'm just going to briefly go through where we are in page one as far as our performance on meeting the SIP mandates. In 2006, we were at about 0.2 of our energy sales. As you can see, in 2008, we jumped up to 0.4, over 0.4. 2009, we anticipate to be at about 0.7, which in 2010, we're going to meet that 1% mandate that is going to be required, which is about 21 million kilowatt hours. On the next page, we take a look at our energy savings primarily on the residential side in two buckets. One is direct savings and one is indirect savings. The direct savings really follow the traditional rebate programs for CFLs, PowerNap, high-efficient air conditioning. The indirect savings, as Gary mentioned, is really an intriguing part for us. For example, unplugging your entertainment center will save 684 kilowatt hours per year compared to some of the other things. That 684 kilowatts just happened to be my entertainment system in my home. In fact, I replaced my old TV set with a flat screen 2 years ago, and my new entertainment system uses more energy off than my old one did on. And I'm not the only one. I think this is really one of these education things that we really need to get through. And on the next slide, looking at the personal example, I use my home as kind of a laboratory to see what can I possibly do to reduce my energy costs. And in 1 year, I actually reduced my overall energy kilowatt hour sales by 23%, which I thought it was a good job. Reduced about 8,000 kilowatt hours. However, the challenge that we face is the recordable energy savings was only about 948 kilowatt hours because it was more of the direct savings, more of the rebate programs that utilities offer. The indirect savings was about 88%, and that's where you get into the plug loads, the phantom loads. That's the challenge, at least our utility, and I think GRE is really facing. How do we capture those energy savings? And we believe it's part of the education process. And some additional challenges that we face, looking at our appliance saturation survey that we did in 2005 with Great River Energy, we see PC penetration increasing above and beyond 2004 levels by 76%. A lot of homes don't just have one PC in the home now, they have multiple PCs. A lot of PCs are left on at night. People aren't turning them off. hot tubs, flat screen TVs. Just in a 2-year period, there was a 17-fold increase in sales of flat screen TVs. And now with the analog to digital conversion, you're going to start seeing a lot more flat screen TVs coming out of the electronic stores. You can't walk in one store right now and see an old tube TV. It seems like they're all flat screen TVs. And it's not really the flat screen TV itself that's causing all the problems. My TV is pretty efficient, but nobody's going to buy a high-def flat screen TV, bring it home, and put rabbit ears on it, at least in the old analog days. You're going to buy a high-def cable box. You're going to buy the high-def DVD player. So this system just keeps growing and growing and growing. And a lot of our customers are telling us they have 3 to 4 flat-screen TV entertainment systems in their home. So it's a challenge for us trying to chase these energy savings as we go. And the other challenge that Gary mentioned, too, is Wellspring Energy. I purchase about 70% of my energy from the Wellspring program. I pay a premium on my kilowatt-hour sales because I want the renewable energy. That's about 20,000 kilowatt hours, and at this time, those indirect savings don't count towards where we're going. Some of the additional challenges, and this is kind of the good news, bad news, is the CFL penetration. In our surveys that we've done this year, we're finding 76% of our customers already have 10 or more CFLs in their home. This is also, everybody's talked about the low-hanging fruit. So we believe that low-hanging fruit is getting picked pretty quickly. Energy Star appliances range anywhere from 56 to 43% that consumers are already purchasing these things moving forward. That's the good news. People are getting it. People are moving forward. The challenge is our goal doesn't start until 2010. We could have waited to say, well, let's not do all of these things until 2010 and then pull the trigger, but we felt an obligation to our member customers since they own us. We need to do the right thing and start off right away. So that's one of the concerns that we need to take a look at is a lot of low-hanging fruits there. The next energy efficient levels, as the pyramid, like Gary mentioned, is going to start moving up from the bottom. Looking at opportunities, we feel, and Gary and I have talked quite a bit on this, is energy education is number one. We need to find a way to get information out to consumers quicker, faster, and we also need to find a way that utilities can get credit for that. I know working with Jeff at the Department of Commerce, their Office of Energy Security, they're open to that idea. In fact, we received a grant at Connections Energy for a program called Positive Energy. I don't know if anybody read the New York Times over the weekend. It was a front page article about that the program. What it is, it's sending information to consumers, looking at their electric usage, comparing it to their neighbors, and then comparing it to their most efficient neighbors. We feel pretty excited about this since we're the first utility in the state to offer this and only the third in the nation. And we're fortunate to take a look and see what we can do with this, but it's part of that energy education. What tools can we give our consumers to help them manage their electric load? One of the other pilots that we're working on is with home display units. Gary mentioned the appliance, the outlet that you can plug in. There's also whole house energy monitors that we can take a look at. We've got two different pilots that we're working on right now with using a smart grid system where we have intelligent meters talking to this home display unit. We've also used this with pilot programs with our limited income programs to help educate consumers again on their usage for not just their whole house, but we also give them the kilowatt meter to plug in to see exactly what each individual appliance is going to be using. And we feel another important component is energy education in the schools. We'd like to start early, start in the elementary, junior high, high school, get them educated on what's going on, and even offer adult education. Connections Energy is doing a couple of programs this year with the Enoch Hennepin Adult Education Program. Consumers are interested in finding new ways to save that energy. So we look at that as really the opportunities. We feel a great partnership with Great River Energy, with the Office of Energy Security, and all the other utilities. Ideas are going back and forth on what works, what doesn't work. We need to have flexibility, too, as we move forward. The requirements start in 2010. We're 100% committed to it, that we're going to make it. We're going to have to learn as we walk through these steps. And in summary, again, we want to make sure that everybody is aware we are committed to making that requirement. We want to focus on the most cost-effective programs, starting at that low end of that pyramid, finding out what is the cost-effective thing to do to offer our customers and move up. Since ultimately our customers, since we're a cooperative, we're nonprofit, our customers own us, it's their money that we have to be ambassadors for, so we have to make sure that we're spending that wisely. And again, share the findings and have the flexibility, which we feel that we have right now with the Office of Energy Security, to find new ways to save energy. Mr. Chairman, that's my presentation.
Mr. Staley, thank you. Members, considering that we have only a couple minutes left and we would like to give Mr. Jaggers the courtesy of hearing him, ask if you have any questions for Mr. Staley that you try to catch him after the hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Jaggers, welcome to the committee. I'm sorry that we're running so short on time. We'll try to give you a few minutes over, but you may be grateful for our running out of time or not. I don't know.
Good afternoon, Chairman, helping members of the committee. I guess this is one of those keep it short, Commander. My name is Robert Jaggers. I'm the Director of Energy Services for the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. All five of our municipal power agencies and the Consumer Power District, along with our independent municipal utilities, are being very aggressive about meeting the 1.5% savings goal. And we find demand-side management as the number one priority. What we're seeing in direct savings is from anywhere from, depending on the maturity of the program. We've got some programs that are 15 years old, like Southern Minnesota Municipal Power Agency and the Triad of Owatonna, Rochester, Austin, to others that just kicking this stuff off, and we're seeing savings anywhere from 0.8 up to 1.5%. Just to some of the issues that we're finding, most of our 74% of our utilities have less than 2,500 customers, including Elbow Lake. So what we find is there's very, very inefficient groupings across the state of what we can go do. Part of it is our electric utility infrastructure savings of 0.5%. Some utilities we find have in their distribution system line losses of 20%, and that expenditures above 0.5% make perfect sense for those types of utilities. And those are the kind of things that we'd like to see allowed. We're also trying to determine what changes can be made, that changes are being made to enhance code enforcement, sustainable building guidelines, or an increased equipment standards, and how we're going to apportion those to utilities for savings. Also concerned about utility loads increasing with the introduction of plug-in hybrids or all-electric vehicles, and how it makes sense to have that load serve on the basis of an energy reduction due to the technology, so that we don't want to have to go off and recreate another 1.5% savings when we're shifting an entire industry to the electric utilities, and how realistic would it be on existing equipment to go off and try to find a further 1.5% savings on that. Those are our concerns. Some of the issues that we're working with, though, we're aggressively meeting the problems. We have a program that we've got a grant from the Office of Energy Security that was just discussed with Positive Energy with two of our cities, Owatonna and Austin, that their rollout is in March of that program. So that is a program that they obviously are looking at to see what kind of numbers, what kind of efficiencies can be gathered from education. We also had another city, the city of Delano, that went after the high power factor compact fluorescent lighting program. They just handed them out to their people and to determine what kind of what that had an effect on their system. We've got cities that you check out that kill a watt meters just from the utilities. Go take them home, along with the Blue Line whole house monitoring systems. So these are a lot of the things that we're doing. Plus, we're working with the Office of Energy Security to get the deemed savings database fully up to speed, since that is going to be the basis for the program. And so we're working directly with the Office of Energy Security on that. We have some of our cities that are wanting to go even further, which we've run that one through Office of Energy Security, where we've got some cities that want to go after solar heat, not solar PV, but heating systems for their water heat and such. And so we've got Marshall and Alexandria are discussing trying to go after that. So we're being very aggressive about what's out there. And it's actually quite a time in history for a lot of these R&D projects. We spent a lot of time working with IRE, the Institute of Renewable Energy at the University of Minnesota. We're constantly in discussion with the University of Minnesota Morris on programs that we can try to share together. And so this is where the municipal utilities, I think, have found their own little niche, is that we can go off and try to find some of these answers without coming back and saying we want things to change. Thank you. And if anybody's had any questions, I'd like to answer them.
Are there any questions for you, please? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. Dragish. I'm sorry to cut your testimony time short, but please keep in touch. We'd like to be updated on what's going on and very interested in what you're doing. Thank you. Members, if there's nothing further to come before the committee, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your patience.